So today's topic is preparing for the holidays. And when I say preparing for the holidays, I am not talking about buying turkeys, finding your recipes, all the tasks involved, and I'm talking about how the two of you as a couple prepare for the holidays.
And remember that November. November is when Americans close their eyes, bow their heads, give thanks for the turkeys they are about to receive, and then they vote.
That was funny, Pete. Okay. And the way I think about it is up to every couple and every family to create the holidays that you wish and that you would like to have at your house. And overall, there are two keys. The keys are anticipation and appreciation. And we'll be talking today a lot about what's involved in anticipation and in appreciation. Michelangelo once said that the greatest danger for most of us is not that our aim is too high and we miss it, but that it is too low and we reach it. And I think that can often be true for the holidays, because in not taking the time to think about or to envision how you want your holidays to be, you end up becoming reactive. And in being reactive, you're not setting a vision for what you truly would like to create in your house and in your family. So one thing I wanted to say as we get into the material is I did post a bunch of PowerPoint handouts for everybody, and those are on the website. So you may want to follow along on the handouts. And there's also a printer-friendly version there, and later on you'll see even a worksheet that's included in that, so you may want to print out a couple of copies of that too. So preparation is the key to working together as a team. When you work together well as a team, you can feel positive, sometimes even exhilarated. When you're not working together as a team, it's an easy setup to feel resentful. So to make the holidays successful, there's actually a whole lot to manage. There's a lot to manage in terms of the couple, the family, and even extended family. And that means that there's incredible numbers of areas for potential conflict. So I wanted to see if we could name some of the most common areas of conflict that come up in the holiday months. And let me just throw that out to all of you. What are some of the things, the areas that you think of that create potential conflict?
There are even more chores to share, because to celebrate the holidays the way I like to, there's a lot of preparation.
Which means a whole lot more work.
Mm-hmm.
Or chores, yeah.
Maybe where to spend the holidays if both people are from different places.
Whose family they're going to spend time with.
Whose family, how much money to spend on the kids' gifts.
Yeah, budget for gifts.
Mm-hmm.
Another one that comes to my mind is it's a time when if there are religious differences in the family, in each couple, mm-hmm. each partner is of a different religion, mm-hmm. Issues that may be in the background may come to the foreground at the holiday time.
Cultural things, too. I have friends in, rather international relationships, and so there are cultural differences that make it hard.
Oh, yeah.
Is there one of those that comes to your mind as you're thinking about it?
Just even Thanksgiving isn't as big a deal to everyone as it is for people.
Right.
Yeah.
What you say is really spot on, because when our family gets together around Thanksgiving, we have somebody who is Jewish, we have Christian, we have somebody from Egypt, we have another person from Greece. So it's kind of like a little United Nations when we get together as a family, and there are different traditions in each place. So you're right on about that, about the intercultural.
Different traditions, different foods.
Yeah.
And for some people, not all, but just being around family can cause different stresses. Being around in-laws or certain aunts or uncles or just certain people can cause stress.
Oh, yeah, and you know, Uncle Bob, you know, who drinks too much every time we get together, or Aunt Sally, who hits the sauce a little too hard. So that's always an interesting dynamic when family gets together.
And even the need to talk about alcohol consumption can be a big stressor, because if one partner wants the other one to drink less, the other one's likely to feel micromanaged, and that can start a lot of big fights. So I like to think of it this way, that there are actually four main pillars to creating a successful holiday. And the first one is what we've been talking about a little bit, which is having the vision to see the holiday for what you would like it to be. Then having effective systems to manage the chores or the workload. As you were saying, there's lots more chores, and you want to be able to manage those effectively and put some systems in place to do that. A third has to do with having the emotional energy to pull it all off, and that involves really good self-care in order to keep yourself from getting sick, from being overtired, from being cranky, and just having emotional energy to give. And the fourth one is really early preparation that identifies these areas of potential conflict and takes both partners' desires seriously. And in order to take each of your desires seriously, it's going to take the ability to listen, like we talked about on our last call, be able to take in feedback and also to give feedback.
So, to be able to put their desires out there.
Absolutely.
Take a big risk to say, this is what I want, this is how important it is, this is what I'm willing to do to help make that happen.
You mentioned emotional energy, but you don't say anything about physical energy. I've had some holidays that just were really wonderful days, and at the end I felt like I'd been hit by a truck. And, you know, that really takes some of the fun out of it. So
right,
what about that?
So, yeah, and I think you're absolutely right that I was kind of lumping that under emotional energy, but it's probably its own separate category, which is really thinking, being able to anticipate the physical, what it's going to call upon you physically to do.
Yeah, well, see, that's what creates, I think, a lot of the physical emotional stress, is that we try to keep our regular schedules going on business as usual, and then on top of business as usual, we add all these other things.
Right, right. So, yeah, you mentioned good self-care. Maybe that's what it is.
And I also like to think of it as there are external forces that are pulling on the couple, and there's also internal forces that are affecting each partner in the couple. So some of the external forces are just things like demands from kids, you know, I want this toy, or will you take me to this event, or I want to go see Santa. So there's all the things the kids want. There's definitely often forces from in-laws and extended family and expectations about who should be at whose house when. There's probably forces from jobs and from work that are also taking up time, and friendships. It's a time of year when friends often want to get together or have special kinds of events in groups of friends. And so when you don't want to let anybody down, you're being then affected by all those external forces that are putting out expectations. And then there's also internal forces that may be affecting your both emotional and your physical energy. So some of the ones I think of, and I'll ask all of you for any others you think of, but some of the internal forces that I think of are, you know, you may be indecisive about where you want to go or what kind of gift you want to buy for somebody, and you may end up obsessing back and forth in your head from that position of indecision. Any other internal forces that anyone thinks of?
Yeah, and for me, it's trying to decide whether or not I'm going to ask you to write the Christmas letter or me.
Yes, that's a good one.
It starts off as an internal.
I think another maybe internal force could be just the pressure of, because especially for the holidays, people feel like you need to buy gifts to give people. For some people, they're in a financial hardship, but yet they feel the pressure to go out there and buy things. For one,
absolutely.
And then another internal pressure could be some people are really reluctant to put their, to go back to the desires thing, to put their desires out there for their vision of how they see the holidays. So they kind of, they might struggle back and forth internally with what to say, how to say it, should they say it.
Yeah, and
partner.
There's kind of that conflict in terms of what you're saying about, do I want to use the holidays just to support more materialism and consumerism? Mm-hmm. And it kind of gets me away from the kind of spirit of what I would like a holiday to be, and that can be a tricky discussion for a number of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get caught up in that conflict because I love the holidays, but the part that's the easiest to get swept into is the commercial part. So even though I love them, that's not really the part that I want to be invested in.
And it's a tricky discussion to have with your partner, too, because it has to do with the set of values.
Mm-hmm.
And values are really, really hard to negotiate.
Mm-hmm.
Another one I think that can be just an internal stressor is, am I going to really let somebody down or disappoint somebody? So a lot of people have anxiety about purchasing gifts or maybe, let's say I choose to make a donation in your name this year instead of giving a gift, and is that going to be a big disappointment? And so indecision and disappointment can also create a lot of anxiety that ends up sapping energy.
Yeah, and stress over trying to get the, quote, right gift for someone.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk some more about the management of the chores and the workload. And under stress, one thing that partners often do is they start trying to manage each other rather than managing the workload itself. And I say that managing each other is actually a dead end. That creates enormous opportunity for power struggles, for fights, for discounting each other, for despair, for grief. And some families even throw in a little alcohol and you end up in a fist fight or name calling or broken doors or so.
Are you talking about the last Christmas we spent together and had a fist fight?
No, I don't remember that. Do you?
No.
But I was actually at a meeting not too long ago with a group of about 40 men, and one of the questions asked was, how many of you remember incidents of violence on any of your holidays? And over two-thirds of the room raised their hand and said, I do remember incidents of violence. So unfortunately, that does happen.
That was also a very special group of men, too, so it's not your typical population.
Right, but it is a factor in some cultures and in some households. Anyway, so I've given everybody a little chart, and what I said here is it can be very valuable to take time to chart the workload. And so I just gave some examples here, but it's not as simple as buying gifts. Buying gifts can be divided up into getting together with your partner and making a list. Then there's the actual shopping. Then there's the wrapping, and in many cases, there's also the going to the post office and sending it. And so when one partner says to the other, hey, how about if you buy the gifts, there's often not a realization that that's a little more complicated process, particularly if it's a large family, than just saying, oh, you go buy the gifts. And with meal planning, there's not only the planning the menu, but there's the shopping, there's the arranging with the other family members, there's the cooking, and there's the cleanup. So, again, a whole lot involved just in the meals for any holiday. Holiday cards, Pete's favorite. And It's, again, it's not just writing the Christmas letter. It's who writes it, but it's buying the cards, getting the photo done.
Apparently they have to get mail, too, and addressed.
Yes. Surprise, surprise. And then it's even a great idea when you can update the addresses from other people's cards after that so that you're not scrambling around next year looking for addresses. Then there's all the stuff for kids and what activities you want to do with them, what clothes they might need, whether you're going to church or synagogue, and what parts of the church and synagogue activities you'll participate in, and the interface with extended family and relatives. So the couple who actually prepares and says who's going to do what by when, that early preparation is a real opportunity to ward off some of that stress.
So if I say to you, Ellen, look, you buy the gifts, I'll cook the turkey, does that work?
That's what we do anyway, isn't it?
I'd like to hear a little bit more about, you know, because Ellen, you said managing each other isn't effective. So I'd like to talk about or hear more about what's the difference between managing each other and delegating a workload. What's it look like if a couple's managing each other, and why is that not effective?
Thank you. That's a great question. And trying to manage your partner means Pete comes home from a long day at the office, and I say, don't come into the house. You have to go to Stanford right now and get these items that we need immediately.
So mostly it's just telling the other person what to do instead of discussing or negotiating it?
Yeah, and that can be on small levels and big levels. I mean, it can be, you know, taking you by surprise and trying to get you to do something quickly on my schedule would not work well, whereas if you and I had an agreement ahead of time that said, I can boss you around in the kitchen today and help me get these things done early for the company that's coming tomorrow, then that's an agreement that I can tell you what to do. But when you don't have an agreement to tell the other person what to do and you start out of anxiety or urgency trying to boss them around, it doesn't usually work very well.
So would you call it then delegating a workload where the two sit down together and discuss who will do what?
Yes. And
okay.
And we're going to talk in a little while about different kinds of decisions that can be used with the workload. And when you have different kinds of decisions that are used, then you know the framework in which you're operating. So when you chart that workload, often what comes up are areas of either difference or those conflict areas come up, or there may be things on the list that nobody wants to do. And so the holes that are the places that future conflicts that happen show up if you take the time to do some pre-planning. So let me ask you, can anybody, and this includes you, Pete, can anybody think of anything that you might want to negotiate with your partner or a family member before the holidays to be better prepared for this year's holidays?
Yeah, I can. I think what would be good if we sat down, made a list of all the people that we decided to get gifts for, make a list, and to see together if we could figure out what we were going to do for each person on the list. And that would take a huge stress off me, just starting with that list, and then decide who was going to get what. And I suppose to reduce the stress even more if we had kind of a deadline on it, who's going to get what by when, so that it would be checked off and we could rely on each other. That I think that would be helpful. And then decide how we're dividing up the Christmas letter.
So that sounded like a big long list you just gave me.
Yeah, no.
So
I would say if both people have time off for the holidays to
wait. I want to hear what you're saying, but I want to finish one thing with Pete first.
Oh yeah.
So Pete, let's pretend that you were going to actually catch me at home as I'm running around doing something and initiate that conversation with me.
Oh, yeah. You just brought a variable in which is kind of important, which is we would first have to decide when are we going to sit down and make this list instead of just trying to catch it as we're walking through the kitchen or something else, but actually say, what about, you know, this Sunday night? We sit down and we make a list and then take it from there. So it would start with when we're even going to do the list.
Well, you're not going to believe this, but I actually put the list, my initial beginning thinking about the list, into a folder, hoping that you might be willing to do it tomorrow as we were driving over to the coast.
Yeah, that's good, because that's a twofer then. We can do it while we're in the car, and yeah, that works. That's good to do it, and I appreciate your thinking of this ahead of time and already starting to make a list. That's good. I like that. Whew.
Okay, and was there anything else you wanted to ask me in this beginning preparation for our holiday planning? You were saying something about it, putting a deadline on it, which is something we've never done before, so I was curious about what you were saying about that.
Oh, well, I think it would be good. It's, for me anyway, it's not, there's a part of me that can say, okay, now I got the list, I don't have to think about it for a while, and then, oops, I start to scramble at the end. So I think having a date on when to have these done, and then we check in with each other about how you're doing on your list, that would help keep me more accountable and keep me on task and on track. And so that'd be, I think, a good thing to experiment with this year to see how that works.
Well, I love the sound of that, because then that also leaves the potential that you'll have those things done and be more available at the end instead of the scrambling at the end.
Yeah, I think that would help a lot. And it would sure avoid... it's kind of embarrassing to say, but one year I forgot Christmas, but that's a whole other story. So that sounds pretty good.
Okay, great. So, Michelle, what were you saying?
Oh, I was just going to say, if both people have time off during the holidays to negotiate how they're going to spend their time together during their time off.
Uh-huh. So let's say you anticipated a conflict about how you were going to spend time off, and you've been really great about raising that can be anxiety-creating to bring up desires. So can you think about how you might bring that up to your partner if you anticipate that there might be a conflict for how to spend time off?
Maybe asking them for a good time for us to talk. And say that I just wanted to put my desires out there for how to spend the time off, and that I wanted to hear my partner's desires for that same time off, and then have a discussion about it. Would that work?
Great. Yeah. Yeah, that sounds really good. I mean, one of the handouts I gave you all is three common mistakes that couples make when they are having or have something to negotiate. And one of those mistakes is the failing to think about it or prepare ahead of time before you actually start talking to your partner. So part of what Michelle was just describing is actually thinking ahead about the fact that they might have some conflict about how to spend the time off and then asking for a time to talk about it. Another mistake that's often made is caving in too quickly to avoid tension or to keep the peace. And so, if Michelle was anticipating conflict with her partner and imagining that that was going to be too stressful, she might be thinking about things she wanted to do on her time off, but not actually bringing those up because she would be fearful of the tension created. And, of course, the opposite side of that is stubbornly pushing way too hard for your own solution. So can you think of an example of that, how somebody might stubbornly push too hard for something that they want and kind of overrun the other person?
Oh, yeah. You could take any of the things that we were discussing that couples could negotiate over the holidays. You could take any of those things and you just dig in and say, this is what I want, period, and basically refuse to be flexible or inquire your partner what's important to them and why. But you just kind of dig in at any of those variables and get stubborn. That'll do it.
That will. Michelle, going back to yours for just a second, let's think of something that you might want to do with your time off over the holidays.
I might want to go skiing if the weather's right.
Okay. Can I ask you a couple questions about going skiing?
Sure.
So this would be to be able to craft a good initiation to your partner about going skiing. First of all, let's say the weather, you know, that the weather report looks like it's going to be good. I heard this morning that Heavenly has such great snow equipment that it's going to open November 21st no matter what, and there's going to be good skiing in Heavenly. So let's just say for now you want to go skiing in Heavenly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and how important is it to you to go?
On a scale of 1 to 10?
Yeah.
I'd probably give it an 8. I haven't been skiing in a while, and we, you know, both have time off.
Okay, so that would be high desire.
Mm-hmm.
And how high is the desire to do it with your partner versus to do it? So is it something you really want to do together, or is it something that you would be okay to do either way?
I'd like my partner to come with me.
Okay. As you think about bringing this up, do you anticipate that you would get a positive response or that you might get a negative response?
I might get a negative response because my partner's a little bit more on the practical side, and I think he might say that it's going to be too crowded there for the holidays and we can't afford it and things like that.
Okay.
So I'm kind of anticipating being turned down.
Okay, so this is great. So you're able to put yourself, before you even bring this up, you're able to put yourself in his shoes, and you realize that his practical concerns might be what would be pushing the no side.
Yes.
And that money would be one and busyness would be another.
Mm-hmm.
Can you also imagine if you got to go, like if your partner went with you and you got to go, can you imagine anything good that might be in it for him?
I'm wondering if once he's there, he might actually have fun. I'm not sure if he'd be able to have fun or if he would just be tense the whole time and thinking we shouldn't be here, we can't afford it, we should be doing something else. He might be able to drop that and still have fun once he's there.
Right. So there's the potential for fun doing this, fun being with you and fun doing the skiing.
Right.
And so you're now aware of both sides. You're aware of the potential good side and also the side that's getting in the way. So what I'm going to do is see if you and I together can craft a good way to start a negotiation. And a good way to start a negotiation process is, first of all, to make a statement of we seem to disagree about. So let's say we know he doesn't want to go skiing. So we seem to disagree about.
Okay.
So you might say what?
We seem to disagree about whether or not to go skiing over the holidays.
Okay, perfect.
See, that's so much better because it's non-argumentative. It's so much better than one person saying to the other one in a similar situation, well, you know, the problem is you don't want to go skiing. Mm-hmm. And right away that it's a finger point, it's an accusation, and then it just deteriorates from there. So it's so crucial to get an agreement about what the disagreement is without creating a finger point. That's probably 40% of an effective negotiation is that initial statement.
You know,
and I really loved. Go ahead.
You know, even before I have this conversation, just anticipating it, is that if he's not going to have fun there, I don't want to drag him out there, then I don't want to go skiing with him if I know that he's going to be unhappy there the whole time.
Right.
And one thing that was great about how you phrased it to begin with is you said we seem to disagree about skiing over the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
So you didn't phrase it as we seem to disagree about skiing,
mm-hmm.
Which makes it much more global.
Yep. I just can't emphasize enough the importance of getting a good, clear, non-finger-pointing agreement on we seem to disagree about dot, dot, dot.
Then the next step is to see if you can think of a suggestion. And the suggestion is a suggestion that you believe might work for you and might also work for him. So I'm going to ask you to see if you could put something out that would say, you know, honey, here's an idea I have. I think that this might work for you because, and I think that this might work for me because.
Okay.
Pete, while she's doing that, would you even be willing to think about how something that he might say on the other side? So, you know, something
okay.
that would be a suggestion that he might put forth, given that you know that he's practical. And he might not want to spend the money, and he might not want to be in the crowd.
So
Michelle's going to put one out first.
Okay.
Okay, so a suggestion I have with regards to going skiing over the holidays is, since we each have 6 days off, I would like to go the full 6 days, but what if we went for 3 days? That could work for me because I still get to go skiing. And it could work for you because maybe that would help you feel like we're saving some money and not being frivolous about being there the whole 6 days. And then we can spend the 3 days doing something else.
Well, that could work for me, you know, because it's reduced in the amount of time. It reduces the amount of unpleasant effort that I would put into it, and it gives you a chunk of what you want as well, and then you're willing to do something I want to do for the next 3 days. Now, that seems like that has possibilities, yeah.
Okay.
So it seems like Pete, in this case, filling in for Michelle's partner is saying you have a positive response to what she's suggested.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that made it positive was a recognition of what was problematic for me. And sometimes that's as important as just what the actual outcome is a recognition and appreciation of what is problematic and trying to do something to adjust what's problematic for me. So that makes the negotiation go smoother.
So let me, Michelle, also try out another possible response if I were your partner, and we'll go back and forth just a little bit more. So I might say, thanks for making those suggestions, and I have another proposal that I think might work for me and could possibly work for you, which is, since I really don't like the holiday crowds, I wonder how it would be for you if we did not go skiing over the holidays but took an extra long, so maybe in January we have the Martin Luther King weekend. What if we took a day off early before the weekend or a day at the end and stayed and went for a longer time? So then I'm hoping that could work for you because you get your skiing in, and it would work for me because we would be up there at least one or maybe even 2 days where there weren't many crowds.
That sounds good to me. That would be great because I love going skiing, so I'd love to go that weekend. And it's also it would also be nice if during the holidays we could do something outdoorsy, just so that I don't feel like I'm in the house cooking the whole time and didn't get to be outside doing something fun and active. Even if it's not skiing, that's fine. If it's not skiing, but just something.
Well, that's easy. I'd love to do something outside with you over the holidays.
Okay.
So just jumping out of the back and forth now, that's, again, an example of how we might have gone back and forth and getting to a solution that worked for both of us rather than only one person's desires getting to run the show. Now, sometimes when there's a conflict, there's different kinds of decision-making strategies that you can use given the conflict. And I like to break those down into three types of decision-making strategies. Those being, you can use unilateral decisions, you can use 51-49% decisions, or you can equally make decisions. And what I'd like to do is give the principles behind each kind and then see as a group for any examples that we can think of with the different types of decisions. So the easiest one for most people to understand is equal decisions, 50-50. We have a conflict. We seem to disagree about X, and both of us have equal decision-making ability to make the decision. And we understand that we're not going to implement anything until we both agree. Now, equal decisions can take more time. They can be pretty time-consuming, especially depending on how powerful the conflict is. And they also often have more conflict opportunity for conflict initially. However, when they go well, or when a good equilateral decision is arrived at, usually both members of the couple buy into the decision, and they're less likely to have any lingering conflict.
Any decision can be 50-50, and any decision can be 51-49, and the same content could be 90-10. Like a 50-50 decision could be, let's figure out whose family we're going to spend the holiday with. And that could be 50-50, or someone could say, I don't care, you choose. Or they both could have strong ideas about where they want to spend the holidays, and at that point, that probably has to be 50-50.
Another one that comes to my mind that's, I think, usually a pretty good idea to have as a 50-50 is the budget for how much money are we going to spend or have available to spend on, let's say, Christmas decorations, Christmas or Hanukkah gifts, or that kind of thing. Anybody else have any thoughts about potentially something else that might be good to be made by both partners in an equal way?
Well, I was also thinking about who you celebrate with. That seems like it really has to be an equilateral decision, but I don't have a new one.
Well, that's a good one.
Yeah, I was just going to say I think the finance part's really important, but that I don't know of a new one either. The ones put out there to me are important.
Another one that is important in some couples, it's not always the case, but in some couples that it'd be equal is the choice of the Christmas photo that goes on the Christmas cards.
Oh, right.
Because if one person thinks they look really awful and the other person doesn't, then they may have some conflict over the choice of the photo.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So let's then talk about unilateral decisions. And unilateral decisions are ones where one partner actually has the power to decide, and it's agreed upon up front. So once I know, let's say, that I have the ability to make the decisions all by myself, that means that at that point I don't need to get much input from Pete. and that I have the authority to make the decision and usually the responsibility to carry out the work connected to it. And unilateral decisions are great in one way, which is that when they're agreed upon up front, they reduce conflict and they save time. So you don't have to pick up the phone and call. I don't have to pick up the phone and call him for every decision in a particular area. If it's not consented ahead of time and somebody makes unilateral decisions that the other person resents, then you're opening yourself up for much, much more conflict. But let's, sticking to the holidays again, what might be some things that would really save time, reduce conflict, reduce pressure, and be okay to handle in a unilateral way?
How about this Christmas, Hanukkah, Ellen, you take care of the decorations, and however you want to decorate it is fine with me. And if you want me to get some stuff or to pitch in, I will, but you can run the show on decorations of the house.
Great. I like it.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe one person, if we're having people over to our house, I could be in charge of just what to cook and cooking.
Yeah. You'd be in charge of the menu. Whatever you make is fine. Whatever you choose, fine. And if you want some help from me in getting some things or making some things, let me know, and you're in charge of the whole menu.
Another one's if people get trees in their house, bring trees in their house for the holiday Christmas tree, decorating that, taking care of that.
We do something that's sort of unilateral in that we each take care of the gifts for our own family members pretty unilaterally.
So you get for your side and your spouse would get for his side?
Right, and you're not having to consult with each other.
No.
Unless you want to.
Right.
I think another good one, which follows on the theme you just brought up, is that if one person in the couple is the one who's in the store buying the gifts, you may have talked about it ahead of time, but then the actual on-the-spot decision of, okay, this is it, I'm going to buy this one, is usually a unilateral decision.
This is kind of going back, but I just thought of something that works better as an equilateral decision. Can we go back a minute?
Sure.
I've been trying to celebrate the holidays in a more green way recently. And, well, like you mentioned, giving, charitable donations as a gift, that's something that's greener than just buying something and, having more junk in somebody's house. But doing the holidays in a more green way encompasses so many different aspects, from the gift giving to the wrapping to what kind of tree is better. And that's something that it doesn't seem like you can really do it unless you both agree on it and you both make a commitment to make all your decisions as green as possible.
That's a good example.
That is, and that's an example of where you could possibly get into values conflicts, too.
Right.
Because if you're 100% committed to doing everything green and your partner isn't, then you could get into lots of squabbles because it could interface in so many areas.
Including
how long you leave the Christmas lights on.
Well, the other one, there you go. The other one, too, it's like on the menu, it's like if one person's a vegetarian, the other person's a carnivore, they might want to have a mutual discussion on the menu.
What kind of decision would this be if we're having people over and I think the yard is kind of a mess and that it should be cleaned up before people come over?
If you think it's a mess, I think it's okay, then I'd say clean it up. Would that be unilateral, equilateral, or what?
I would love to use this example in a minute. I want to do the 51-49% and then come back to this, Michelle.
Okay.
So in a 51-49% decision, and as as Pete was saying, the percentages can be varied a bit. But what that means is that one person has the final authority to make the decision. And usually these are in areas that a couple does disagree on. And it's understood that if you decide on a 51-49, that the person doing the work is the person who gets to make the decision. And this kind of decision takes a lot of trust because it means that I will seriously take into account Pete's wishes. So if I'm the one who has the ability to make the decision, I'm going to do the work on it. I am going to, you know, up to a 49%, take what he cares about into account. And a good example of that would be the what to cook, especially if one person, let's say, were a vegetarian. But even so, lots of people have very special holiday meals or foods that they really want. And if I'm the one in the grocery store and I'm the one who has the decision, it still doesn't mean I will include in the menu what he cares about.
Another one, too, is if you're going to redecorate a room and somebody's going to do most of the work, to go get the stuff, go out and search around and do most of the effort in terms of the redecoration, you can ask your partner a lot what they want, but the person who does most of the work gets 51% of the vote. But as long as you get 51% of the vote, it makes it very, and you know that, it makes it a lot easier to collect your partner's opinion and do the best you can to take that into consideration. But because you're doing most of the work, you get most of the vote.
So I encourage all of you to use many of these. I mean, use any of the areas that you identify as conflict areas with your partner, then think about which kind of decision is going to help you the most so that it helps you get through it rather than turning it into something that's a long-lasting conflict. And going back to the example, Michelle, that you gave about cleaning the yard, and this is like you want to get it cleaned up before relatives come. And your
yeah, and it's
does.
Really not my stuff.
Yeah, I think I'm going to regret you bringing this up, Michelle.
Yes, at our house it might be a yard or a sunroom.
Oops.
So,
I know where this discussion's going to head right after the call.
I bet you don't. I bet you don't. Because it's going to head a new place.
Really?
Yes. So, if you think about there being four major roles that are needed in any couple's relationship to get the household work, the kids, the chores, all of that stuff done, you have the person who has the vision. You have the person who does lots of the chores and does lots of the work. You have a person who's a manager and who develops systems to see that things get done and might be integrating or coordinating the action of others and might be determining the best resources to use. And you have a fourth role, which I call, I still would like a better name for this, but the investor. And the investor is the person who pays a lot of attention to nurturing the relationship, sees the relationship as an asset that is really worth nurturing, and pays attention in an ongoing way to what they're giving to the system. And this is one of the things that helps with that emotional energy and physical energy and self-care issues that we touched on near the beginning of the call. And in your handouts, you'll see a list of really what are things for each of those four roles in more depth than I just laid it out. But a job like Michelle just raised, which is the cleaning up of the yard or the cleaning up of the sunroom, are jobs that could be done by a doer. They could be done by a manager. And if, Michelle, if you said to your partner, for example, hey, to really get us ready for the holidays, it's going to take some effort in each of these four arenas. And what part do you want me to play? What part do you think I should play? What part do you think would, you know, are you willing to play? And so, just to give an example, Pete, on the one you raised, which is, it seems like using those four roles, what do you think would be the best way to get, for example, the yard cleaned up that Michelle raised?
Well, the simplest would be just to say, I'll do it.
For her to say it?
No, for me.
For him, me.
But in case our yard, I would do it, and or the sunroom. I guess the simplest would be, okay, I'll do it. It's my stuff that's out there.
So the simplest would be that you were willing to be the doer.
Yeah.
In that.
Yeah.
Category.
Yeah.
Another possibility would be, Michelle, you say to your partner, you know, I can see two choices. One is, in this case, you do it, or I manage it, and I'll bring somebody in to do the yard cleanup because I don't really want to do it either.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you feel about that?
Right.
So, because a lot of times when there's a task to do, and if one person doesn't want to do it, the other person assumes they have to do the task, rather than actually managing the task getting done, which might be less onerous.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
So I know we're nearly out of time, and I don't want to forget one thing, or I just want to underline one thing, which is the giving strokes and appreciation. You know, glorify your partner, stroke them, be thankful, really notice the efforts that they're making. You know, are you going to go through the holidays yourself being crabby and discounting the amount of effort that's involved in discounting your partner, or are you going to bring a lot of positive energy into the system? And the more strokes you give, the more you bring positive energy into your system. And if you're willing to learn from going through the process of early preparation and early anticipation, and learning what works well this year, because the more you learn what works well, then you can lay a stronger foundation for next year. So as we wrap up, I would just, can any of you think of one really positive stroke you might have based on your past experience of holidays? What's a positive stroke you might have for your partner?
I might say I appreciate them, you know, being somewhere, doing something over the holidays they weren't necessarily thrilled about, but that they knew was perhaps important to me and was a good sport and went ahead and did it.
So you might even bring that up and say thanks
that.
For doing that.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I like being appreciated for the things I do during the holidays. Does that count, or is that too selfish?
No, that counts a lot, and be willing to say that. And what I was going to say to Ellen is that I really appreciate all the initiation you take around the holidays. That would be really easy for me just to let slide. But I appreciate the forethought, the initiation, the effort that goes into making plans about what has to be done, because there are deadlines, and there's a part of me that can let it slide. So I really appreciate the initiation around gift giving and who we're going to have over and what we're going to do and the Christmas list and et cetera like that. So I it just frees me up historically not to have to put a lot of energy into thinking about that. So when you do it, I appreciate that a lot.
Thank you. Thank you. And I appreciate your wonderful Christmas letters and the creativity that you put into those. I really is very meaningful to me.
You're here.
So I think we are done for today.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
The origin of it, to give thanks for the bountiful that we have in this country. Even though we're going through some trying times right now in the country, we still have so much to be grateful for. And it's really nice to be able to pause and give thanks for all the wonderful blessings that we have in our life and the relationships that we have with people, and to really pause and acknowledge the blessings we have that make living here really great, and the situations that we are with the people that we love are great. So it's nice to pause and give thanks.
Well said, Pete.
Thank you.
Thank you. Those are some great ideas.
All right.
All right. Until next time.
We'll see you
Goodbye.
Then.
Until next time. Bye-bye.